What's going on, DTC friends and family? I'm here to talk to you about Dynasty Leagues, but not in the way that I usually do. No, we're not talking about the Dynasty Diagnostic. We are talking about Dynasty Owner. The best fantasy football leagues are those where every owner consistently pays attention, responds to trade offers, changes their lineup, and is always looking to improve their team. We've all been in leagues where non-active owners absolutely kill the vibe, and you don't get any enjoyment from actually participating in that league, win or lose. These aren't one of those. This is no off-season for the owners on Dynasty Owner. That's who you're challenging yourself when it comes to Dynasty Owner. Other elite fantasy football players are committed to competing and are vetted before they're even placed in Dynasty Owner leagues. It's the only football platform with a patent game using actual NFL salaries and contracts. Combine this with a salary cap, trading options, advanced team rosters, and devoted and elite owners willing to compete against you, and you're faced with the same decisions that NFL owners and general managers must make on a day-to-day basis. If you are ready to take the leap, to take the next step, and to take on the absolute creme de la creme of Dynasty gamers, then don't miss out. We have an amazing mobile app that will be out on iOS and Android in May, just in time to start filling up your draft with all the rookies being added to the player pool. Just waitlist at www.dynastyowner.com so you don't miss out when new leagues open.
Scale me up, Scotty. Calculate, got me up late. Gotta make another trade for Sunday. Hey, can't wait, not enough bait. Frost on my opponents, gonna call and cupcakes in. It's no hate, just facts. There's just no way I'm last. Technically, I'm last. 101 pick, I'm bad. Bad at the bone, ain't mad at the dome. Ain't rather than know the anatomy. Know a value of rose is dandy to know the man. JPAZ, let's go, let's go, let's go.
Welcome to the Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast, a show dedicated to Dynasty fantasy football trades and player values, with your hosts, John Paul Hurley and Izzy Elkafoss.
Hey everyone, welcome to yet another edition of the Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast. We are back to talk about some hot player news. We've got some trade wire stuff to talk about. And Izzy's got a little bit of a strategy, like strategic type of thing to talk about for the year 2020. Joining me is my co-host, Izzy Elkafoss, the Pharaoh Fantasy. What's up, man?
What's going on? Feels like it's been a while, but it really kind of hasn't.
We've kind of staggered the release of our shows, like with the video podcast and stuff like that. So we've been pretty consistent, but it feels it feels like there's been a gap.
Do you remember how to do this?
Do I remember how to do this?
Do you remember how to host? And I'm going to try to see if I can remember how to actually provide content.
There's been a big enough gap where I've completely forgotten.
Oh, we'll pick it back up. We'll knock the rust off, hopefully.
So, talk about Cam being picked up by the Patriots, Bill Belichick, for like basically a league minimum salary, but he just wants to prove himself. It's about respect, not about money. And I quote Cam on that.
Gotta love it.
So, let's just talk about it. What do you feel about Cam going to the Patriots? I think it was probably a little bit of a surprise for many because of how he matches the system, but it's a big splash.
It is. I'm surprised that people aren't that. I thought that people would be really excited about this. But when I'm following it on Twitter, and I immediately put up a couple polls, and he's right in the Tannehill range. What do you think of that?
It's kind of disrespectful, in my opinion. I don't think he belongs to like that low. He was almost in that same position before being added to a team.
You think?
Yeah, under the prospect of him going, he's going to sign somewhere. But I think the Patriots would be the most ideal situation for him, out of all the teams that could have grabbed him. And yet he hasn't really gone up significantly.
Yeah, it is a little interesting. I think people, since they waited so long, they felt like there's some, I think everybody's kind of expecting him not to be back to 2018 form. Right, or even 2017 for him. Obviously, dealing with the injuries, the layoffs, I think everybody kind of thinks he's washed in a sense, or at least the pessimists think he's washed. I look at it and see. I don't know if Bill would necessarily bring him in if he didn't feel like he was washed. And I get it. He got a great deal on Cam. But they obviously went through the physical. They went through the protocol and he passed, right? So I don't know. I agree. I don't think he should be in the Tannehill level. I think he should be above that. I think he should be with the, you know, just below the Matt Stafford line. I think that's where I'm comfortable having him.
Yeah, like the 10 to 15 range.
10 to 15 range, yeah. And I think Tannehill's right outside that for me. I mean, what's his ranking in ADP? Do you know? You can check the DTC. What's his ranking in DTC?
Cam Newton. Oh my gosh, I'd have to keep scrolling. QB 20 below Jimmy Garoppolo and just before Justin Herbert and Ryan Tannehill, as you mentioned.
Where is Ryan Tannehill?
Ryan Tannehill's QB 22 valued at 4.8 in single quarterback leagues, and Cam Newton's a 5.1. Superflex bumps their values up, obviously, to Tannehill 21.2, Cam 22.0. So very close.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I have him in the, you know, 15 range pretty comfortably just because of what we've seen in the past. Sure, he may not be able to do what he did in the past with his legs just because of his durability issues. But, I mean, he's still early 30s. I think he just turned 31, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't know. And the Patriots is a wonderful place to resurrect your career. So I don't know. I think he's a value where he is, and I get it. There is risk, but once, if people see him come out of the gate strong with New England, his value is going to skyrocket.
Yeah, I agree.
Just because of what we've known to expect out of Cam. Right now, it's the concern of, okay, is he even going to be ready for the season? Is he going to get, and there's no preseason, so he can't get hurt there.
He hasn't taken a snap since 2018, right?
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I don't think he took a snap in 2019.
I don't think he did either. But there was always delays, but I could fact check.
But regardless, you look at the, like I said about the preseason, I don't think it's officially been canceled. But I'm guessing they're going to cancel the preseason. Like, that would be my expectation. And if they cancel the preseason, then you're looking at, well, Cam should be healthy for week one, and we'll see how long he can stay healthy. But if he starts out hot, I mean, if he's at QB 20, he'll be a high-end QB 2 in Superflex. So I think he's a great value right now.
Yeah, I agree. And I've got a couple of follow-ups here. And just to go back and clean this up a little bit, close the loop, so to speak, he did attend 89 passes in 2019, so he has taken snaps recently, but obviously that was towards the beginning of the season, I think. So,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, it was weeks 1 and 2.
Yeah.
So, no touchdowns. He hasn't thrown a touchdown since 2018. We'll clean it up.
There you go.
So, the follow-ups, yeah. One of the major ones for me is one of the things I'm noticing, obviously we noticed that Cam hasn't really jumped way up in value. But also the players around him haven't jumped way up in value. We're in a redraft right now, and I'm seeing like James White, Julian Edelman, N'Keal Harry, Sony Michel, all the surrounding cast haven't jumped up at all, as if Cam hasn't been signed either. So like, people are not only disrespecting Cam's value, but they're also disrespecting the surrounding cast.
Which I can kind of appreciate, just because Cam has never really elevated receiving corps
I thought Cam has elevated. Cam targeted Christian McCaffrey a ton, obviously, and I think it's more of a system thing. But I could see the same thing for James White.
Sure. You know, I think with Christian McCaffrey, everybody targets him, right? So,
and like, you don't feel anything different for N'Keal Harry than you did if no. Jarrett Stidham was the.
Cam doesn't really get me going from a passing perspective.
Okay.
It's always been what he can do, touchdowns on the ground. I mean, the 6-point touchdown versus 4-point, those start to add up when you get 6-7 touchdowns on the ground. And he's never been a guy, I mean, obviously Greg Olsen had a very solid fantasy career with Cam. But for me, it's the running back and tight end. So yeah, I do think that the only issue with the tight ends in New England is they're unproven. You got Keen and Asiasi as like the guys that we expect to be the future there in New England. but how do we really know if they're even any good? And does that really change their value? I don't know.
Yeah. And Asiasi is just so-so for me.
No. Oh, yeah. Asiasi. Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Nice. Very nice.
I got to laugh out of Mo. That's what matters.
That's nice.
You got to go pretty deep for that dad joke, I guess.
Nice. That's a good one. Yeah, you got to be bilingual.
That's right. You got to be bilingual.
That's a bilingual dad joke. I appreciate that.
So the other follow-up portion that I had is we are kind of putting him right in that like 10 to 15 range, but I want to see exactly how high is high for him right now. So I'm going to go through each of the quarterbacks from 20 and down. And you tell me when you'd stop, like when Cam is no longer worth whatever quarterback I'm calling out. Okay, so Justin Herbert or Cam Newton?
Herbert.
Jimmy Garoppolo or Cam Newton? This is a strictly a value play, not which one you prefer.
I mean, we already know that the value is Jimmy over Cam.
Yeah.
Like, I think our rankings is based off of market. So I think the market value is appropriate with Cam being at 20. Let's go through the names. Let's make sure that they're right.
So, and what about you? Like, what you prefer, that's fine too. Yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo and then Aaron Rodgers at 18.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers over Cam.
Matt Ryan at 17. So maybe we are, maybe 10 to 15 is very...
I think, you know, the Dynasty community overvalues a lot of the younger guys too.
Yep.
Who is 10 through, give me 10 through 20.
Tua.
Yep.
Baker Mayfield.
Yep.
Jared Goff.
Yep.
Sam Darnold.
Yep.
Drew Lock. Yep. And Daniel Jones. I can't imagine anybody wanting Cam ahead of any of those guys, including myself.
It's amazing how far Aaron Rodgers has fallen. I mean, he was the QB5 last year, and now he's QB18.
Well, I mean, suddenly he's 36, and suddenly there's a lot of options at quarterback. So, like, this wasn't the case a year or 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I have a hard time. Now that I see the names in Dynasty, I have a hard time having him. Where's Stafford? 16?
16, yep.
Yeah, so maybe I thought Stafford would be higher than 16. So, yeah, he should be in the – who's 16, 17?
Matt Stafford, Matt Ryan at 17, Aaron Rodgers 18, and then Jimmy Garoppolo at 19, Cam at 20. And then it kind of becomes a little bit – I think he's actually perfect from what I would take because Herbert's below him. Tannehill's below him. Cousins is below him. Minshew, Jameis. So,
yeah, I mean, I'd have him ahead of Jimmy Garoppolo. And I think that's where my line is. I mean, I'd be okay with him. With Aaron Rodgers, I don't know. I worry about Aaron Rodgers' career continuing. I can see him calling it quits. He doesn't, when he's on the field, he doesn't seem that interested to begin with, right? So I don't know, but I get it. I think Cam, I stand corrected. Maybe he's not around 15. He should be probably, I think he's inside the top 20.
Yeah,
I'd have him over Jimmy at 19 based on that list.
I agree. I'm glad we talked that through because that didn't sit right looking at the players' names.
But let's say Cam is healthy, right?
Yep.
He's healthy and he's back to like 2017, 2018 form based on his age. Where would you put him?
Yeah, like legitimately in that 10 to 15 range, like we talked. If he comes back and he's good old Cam's, like that right around, I would say even like 10 to 12, because 10 is Tua, completely unproven, you know, and then Baker and Jared Goff, those guys don't excite me too much. Sam Darnold, Drew Lock, Daniel Jones. I'd be fine with having him ahead of all those guys if he bounces back.
Okay. And obviously, 2017, when I say 2017, 2018 form, so 2018, in 14 games, he had 3,400 yards, 24 touchdowns, and then from the rushing side, he had 488 yards and 4 touchdowns.
Yep, and I agree, and I think bounce back would be contingent upon what he does on the ground, because that's where he gets that better floor.
Yeah.
I don't think that he competes with a lot of these guys with just his arm.
Yeah. I don't know. I still think even at 20, I get it. I think he's at appropriate value. But I think a lot of the guys in that range. You know, when you look at Stafford, Ryan, Rodgers, I think they're all depreciated. Mm-hmm. Stafford shouldn't be depreciating because he's still 30, 31, but he never gets the respect.
He's 32.
So he'll always be in that range or lower, even if he comes out gangbusters. It's just how it is with him.
Yep.
But you look at Matt Ryan, he's depreciating. Aaron Rodgers depreciating. So like those two guys in front of him, they're depreciating in value.
Yeah.
Whereas Cam isn't necessarily depreciating. He's already depreciated, I feel. I don't see much room for him to depreciate even more unless he comes out and completely craps the bed or gets hurt again. And I think the odds of him bouncing back are greater than him
flopping,
falling flat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he'd be he's still a good buy. Yeah, good value.
Yeah. So let's talk about, I think a lot of people talk about, okay, well, he's a buy. What is he a buy for? So out of curiosity, what would you pay for Cam?
So most of my leagues are super flex, similar to probably most of our listeners, I would imagine. And it'd be hard to pull Cam away from it. Well, a lot of teams that have Cam probably have him as an extra. I don't think they were relying on him in 2019. And, you know, it's been such a long time since you could rely on him as a starter. So he might be a third quarterback on many teams. So I don't think it'd be too difficult to pull him, but you might need, with the latest news, you might need to pay a little bit extra just because of that news. So while he's being valued as a 22 in the calculator, I think you probably have to offer a player and or pick combination of like 24 or higher.
Okay. So you think that rookie draft comes around. What is the 22? That's the 107?
It's the 106 exactly.
106. Now, would you trade Cam for the 106?
In a super flex league, yeah. Because I like the top six.
So you'd rather have one of the running backs than... Like, where are you taking Herbert?
After 106. I think this probably nets you, like, depending on how you feel about the running backs, Swift or Akers. I mean, you could do that or pivot towards Judy or Lamb, right?
So I've seen Herbert go anywhere from 105 to 109.
Yep.
And in the calculator, I think he's valued at the 107. But you would rather have Cam than Herbert, or would you rather have Herbert than Cam?
I'd probably rather have, well, it would be completely on team construction, but if it was in a vacuum choosing between one or the other, I would probably prefer Herbert in a vacuum because he's like the new shiny toy. He's 10 years younger, so he's got, you know, a full 10 years to figure out like if he's going to be good or not. I don't mind his landing spot. He's got, you know, low, just to make it easy, I'm going to say Herbert, but it's not okay. Like it's
What number would you throw, or what draft pick would you throw at a Cam owner to try to acquire Cam?
To try to acquire Cam, it would probably be like 108, 109, I would try. And I think if your league hasn't had its rookie draft yet, there's another variable that's kind of coming into play, and that's how highly valued rookie picks are. So like the Cam stuff aside, it's cool he gets a bump because of the news. But rookie picks, I think, have a bigger bump because of the rookie draft. Like, you're either doing it right now or it's upcoming, and there's a lot of excitement surrounding it.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's talk quickly about the rookie situation.
Yep.
And this goes for a lot of players, a lot of changes in the league, a lot of players. I mean, Cam included in this. But with the COVID stuff going on, camps are getting pushed back. Off-season workouts are just purely receiver, quarterbacks, running backs getting together and running routes and doing so on and so forth.
Preseason's going to be gone.
What's that?
Preseason will be scratched.
And that's the big one. I mean, they're looking at, I think the NFLPA is looking at trying to get rid of the preseason altogether.
Yep.
If that happens, it's not good for the rookies at all. Even the... When you look at, you go through the list, and I'll go through this here in a second, but let's start with the rookies. Rookie receivers, especially, running routes in an open field and shorts and a t-shirt with your quarterback, just kind of throwing the ball around, that's not the same as lining up with offensive linemen, with pass rush, with defensive backs going up against you. It's just, it's cute, right? It's good to work on like timing and so on and so forth, just like speed of players and all of that. That's going to help. But it that holds the candle to what actually is expected when everybody's lined up.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get that unless you're running, you know, an X amount of practice, reps, scrimmages, getting the preseason in. Like when you're talking about expectation for rookies, I mean, it is for rookie wide receivers especially, it's surprising when a rookie wide receiver comes out week one and shows up.
Yeah.
With this happening, the odds of that occurring are exceptionally low. And then on top of it, historically speaking, a lot of the rookies that you see, rookie wide receivers you see, they get slotted in into that wide receiver one role, right? There really isn't a wide receiver one that they have to usurp. In this year's class, you look at with Jerry Jeudy, he's got Courtland Sutton, who's a legitimate wide receiver one. He showed that last year.
Right.
And then you look at CeeDee Lamb, he's got a legitimate wide receiver one, wide receiver two, and now he's stepping in as a third receiver. So how legitimate is he going to be with no reps?
Mm-hmm.
You know, CeeDee and Amari have already been there. You look at Justin Jefferson, he's a wide receiver two in Minnesota.
Oh, Gallup and Amari, I got you, yep.
What'd I say?
CeeDee and Amari.
Yeah, Gallup and Amari, I apologize. You look at Justin Jefferson. Jalen Reagor is the only one I feel like could step in and be, you know, with Alshon being hurt, unless Deshaun is back. But Deshaun is more of, he's not a wide receiver one, right? He's a complementary player. So there might be an option there, but, you know, obviously Zach Ertz is a bona fide tight end, and he's going to demand, you know, wide receiver one-ish type targets. And so you're looking at this, Henry Ruggs is probably the only one that could be a true wide receiver one if he's actually a wide receiver one material, right? Which is the concern with Henry Ruggs. But you look at those players and you say, where is the opportunity? So these guys aren't going to be force-fed if they have to, right? Even if they're not ready, they're not going to be force-fed. These teams have a luxury to not force feed these guys. And if they're not ready, they're not going to get force fed. And I don't think they will be. So the rookie wide receivers, I think, should be faded. Like, you should be trading those late first round picks. And I'm good taking a Cam. You have a better shot at Cam starting out hot than you do one of the wide receivers.
Yeah.
And for me, I think it's an easy decision to trade these late first round picks, especially. Running backs need less time, but I think the preseason still hurts these running backs quite a bit. You know, so when you look at the Marlon Macks, the Damian Williamses, the Daryl Hendersons, the Malcolm Browns, the Kerryon Johnsons, they're going to have a leg up on all of these guys early. So I would be surprised if all of these rookie running backs came in the first couple weeks and ran away with jobs. I can see them being eased in over the course of the first few weeks. But that will undoubtedly, we see this every year, teams are impatient. Dynasty owners are impatient. So if they see Jonathan Taylor come in, and let's say it's a 60-40 split between Mac and Jonathan Taylor for the first 2 weeks, where Mac is getting 60% of the work.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Jonathan Taylor's value is still going to be where it's at?
It'll dip, yeah.
It'll dip. I mean, it will dip. Whether it should or should not, like, we know that this stuff will likely happen. Are you expecting Jonathan Taylor to step in, even with all the COVID, late training camp, no preseason? Are you expecting Jonathan Taylor to come in and get 80% of the workload?
No, I mean, the funny thing is if they drafted him in the first round, I would have a different answer, but I don't think he's not right away. It's going to take some time.
Okay. So do you remember the Derrick Henry draft?
Yeah.
So he got drafted in the second round as well, and sure, he had DeMarco Murray in front of him, and he was going 103, not 101, but it took him a long time to get work.
Yeah, and that's a good point, and DeMarco really wasn't, I don't think he was held in as high regard as Marlon Mack, right?
Well, DeMarco Murray was at the tail end of his career. He still had name value, but
yeah. We
were expecting Derrick Henry to come in and take the job.
Yep.
Right? And DeMarco Murray kind of plotted his way that season.
And, yeah, he was like a veteran
presence.
Henry
still didn't take it. Yeah. What's that?
He was just like a veteran presence on the team. Nobody thought he'd take significant work, but he ended up getting it. So,
yeah. And then you look at with Marlon Mack, who is a young, still, he's in his prime, right? And he put up 1,000-yard season. He was a solid player last year. So I don't think he goes away. But when I ask you that question, now I ask an average dynasty owner, right? The average dynasty owner. They're still going to expect Jonathan Taylor to come out with 80% workload. And if he doesn't meet that expectation, his value is going to decline in their opinion.
I agree. Yeah.
So I think all of these rookies, if you're drafting them, you have to stay patient because this should be the expectation. You know, reduce your expectation. And if they come above that, then be happy about it.
Yep.
But don't set the expectation high. And if they come below that, you change the perception of that player moving forward.
I agree.
And sell them at a discount.
And it'll pay off by week six when Marlon Mack gets injured. So
if he does get it, yeah. He's not the most durable of players. I'll give you that. But I mean, I can't iterate enough. When you look at Burrow and Tua, those guys, even the quarterbacks, you can't expect them to come out and be solid out of the gate. They're going to struggle. They should struggle. And if they don't struggle, I mean, I would be, if Burrow comes out and looks really good with all of this that's going on, he should be easily a top 8 dynasty quarterback.
Yeah. And I think he could. His chances of coming out hot are obviously much greater than Tua's because of how long it's been since Tua's taken snaps too. But
and Tua has, I mean, at least he's got Fitzpatrick there, probably bridge the gap where Burrow doesn't have that problem.
Yeah, that's true.
Again, with Joe Burrow, he's got Ryan Finley as his QB2, right? So that's there's not going to be much of a bridge there. So Burrow's going to be thrown in. If he comes in and he's hot out of the gates, he should be. I mean, that's exceeding expectations for me. So he should be a screaming buy if that happens, even with his value currently where it is.
There you go.
Now let's look at veterans, right? We talk about like teams that are new. We had 5 coaching changes, right? So we had the Redskins, the Cowboys, the NFC East, right? So Redskins, Giants, Cowboys, Browns, Panthers. So those are 5 teams with 5 brand new coaches. Those teams will, of course, be at a disadvantage out of the gates with everything that's going on. Then you look at the Panthers, who not only are the only team that lost a coach, they also lost a starting quarterback. So now they have a new quarterback, a new head coach, a new offense coordinator.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at that and saying, okay, this is a team that I expect to be as slow as possible. Out of all the teams in the NFL, I would expect the Panthers to be the slowest out of the gates based on everything that's happened. Not only is the coach new, it's a rookie coach of the NFL.
Mm.
Right? And Teddy Bridgewater, we haven't seen him be an extensive quarterback since the knee injury. So we don't know how he can carry. Can he carry DJ Moore? Can he carry Christian McCaffrey? Can he carry, if it's Robbie Anderson and Curtis Samuel, what can he actually do? So I'm fading all of the Panthers in not only dynasty, but redraft. I think Christian McCaffrey is the only one where he's going to sustain his production just because it's Christian McCaffrey. But DJ Moore needs Teddy Bridgewater. He needs the offensive coordinator. He needs the head coach. He needs all of that to come in together.
Yeah.
I don't see that being a situation where they come out and everything's rosy. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'm a little bit more optimistic on it just because it would be difficult to fail given that supporting cast, but I could see all of the newness is going to count against them. But maybe after a couple weeks of the regular season, that could be shifted. I mean, how long? It's definitely going to play an impact early on, but how much time do you think it's going to take for them to get into a rhythm?
Yeah, I think a while. With delayed camp and no preseason.
Yeah, but how many weeks?
Oh, I mean, I'd expect at least a handful of weeks.
4, 5, 6, 7.
I mean, I wouldn't expect the Panthers to be clicking until halfway through the season.
And that's actually, I'm glad you identified that because this poses as a wonderful buying opportunity early season for a lot of these guys, right?
Absolutely.
And then, like, do you think that second half of the season that we could see some pretty significant production out of that offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll take legitimately half a season for everything to come together, if it ever does. We don't even know if it's going to come together.
Right.
Right? That's the best part. That's the best part about all this, is that you have a new coach. How do we even know that he's a new good? It could be Freddie Kitchens 2.0. We're waiting all season for things to come together, and they never do.
I agree.
Right? Or Teddy Bridgewater. Maybe the coach is great, but Teddy's not.
Yeah.
And then we got to wait for, you know, Teddy just can't get it together. Maybe he was really good in New Orleans, and he can't get in tune with this system, and it doesn't work. So I don't know. I think it's just huge. Carolina is a huge red flag for me in redraft and dynasty, outside of Christian McCaffrey. But Christian McCaffrey is a legitimate, you could sell him for the farm, and I would say, like, okay, that's totally fine. You can hold or sell Christian McCaffrey, and I'm totally good with it, as long as you're not buying him.
Sure.
But if I'm looking at these teams, right, now we got to identify, okay, what are the teams that should do well? I mean, do we look at the teams that do well or that likely won't do well, Hurley, with the changes?
Well, obviously don't do well, since you started with the Panthers, right?
Okay, we can go don't do well. With Miami, they have Brian Flores is still there, but new offensive coordinator Chan Gailey is there, and potentially new quarterback Tua. Not as big of a concern if Ryan Fitzpatrick's under center. And in Chan Gailey's offense, I still think Devontae Parker will still be fine. The running backs, it's Howard and Breda. They're new, but they're at least veterans. So it shouldn't take too long for that to kind of come together. But if Tua starts, there's a problem, I think. Because Flores isn't an offensive mind. He's a defensive mind. So all of that is subject to some real issues. You look at New England, all they have is Cam, who's a veteran presence. So I think their transition will be a lot smoother. The Jets and the Bills, there are no changes whatsoever from last year to this year. So I think they're set up to be the least affected in the AFC East. Obviously, with the Bengals, only Burrow. So how long it takes Burrow to come in and show well. You look at the Ravens, they're fine. They haven't had any changes. So Lamar Jackson and his, I guess, expected regression. I don't necessarily know with everything that's happened to the other teams, because we have to look at it from a defensive side as well. There's a lot of defensive changes. So if there's defensive changes, then Lamar Jackson's going to be that much further ahead, right? You look at the Browns, new offensive coordinator, new head coach, the whole thing is brand new from a coaching staff perspective. So what we expected from them last year, we might have to wait halfway through this season to see if they're going to be good going into 2020, right? Halfway through 2020.
Yeah.
What we need to also be concerned about is Stefanski. What he did to the Vikings offense last year was miserable. You saw it. What did you think of the offense?
It was sadly run first, and we all wanted to see him air it out.
Revolved around very easy passes and a lot of running. And with Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb there and Stefanski's preference on that sort of ball control, easy passes, you expect a guy like Jarvis Landry to kind of fit in that. Baker Mayfield's efficiency will go up, but I don't know if his total volume, and I don't know if Baker's ascension is going to happen this year with Stefanski. Right. Mm-hmm. He's got to learn Stefanski's. The whole thing's got to be revamped from the offensive coordinator to the head coach. And we got to see how they utilize Baker Mayfield. He's got to get used to it. He hasn't even had a really good season under his belt. So I expect the Browns to be slow, too, outside of the running backs. I mean, I think Chubb and Hunt, I think you're a big buyer of Hunt. Chubb should get a ton of work, and so should Hunt. So I think those two guys are, you know, I don't want to say they're. Neither, I don't want to say they're buys, because Chubb is really expensive and Hunt is still the running back two there, but I would be optimistic about the running backs in Cleveland and Jarvis Landry. I would still be concerned about OBJ
and Hooper
going into 2020. Yeah. And Hooper, you know, I think the way at least Kyle Rudolph was used, right? But that was maybe more the injuries to Thielen and just the lack of pass catchers.
Yep.
But you know, we'll see how Stefanski uses Austin Hooper. I mean, they brought him in for a reason.
I agree.
And then you look at the Steelers, no changes. So that division outside of Cleveland is completely revamped. No coaching changes outside of Cleveland in that division.
Crazy.
Which is a huge disadvantage for Cleveland. I mean, they play those teams twice, right? So that's six games where they're at a significant disadvantage.
Yep.
Right?
You got it.
So, I mean, you go through, and this is something that I challenge people to do. I won't go through all of these teams, but I'll just go through some of the offensive coordinator changes. Jacksonville Jaguars, Jay Gruden's there. Gardner Minshew has been there. So I'm not too concerned about the Jags, but it's still a new offensive coordinator. How long does it take for him to get up and running with Jay Gruden? You look at the Denver Broncos. They brought in Pat Shurmur. Obviously, Drew Lock is interesting because I think Pat Shurmur is a really good offensive coordinator.
Yeah, for quarterbacks, I agree.
Yeah, and I think if anything, in the way that Denver is surrounding Drew Lock with talent, it might take a little bit of time for the Pat Shurmur effect on Drew Lock. But I mean, if it does hit, I mean, Drew Lock's going to be massive in Dynasty. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of like maybe a rich man's Teddy Bridgewater. He's surrounded by great weapons, and I think it's going to be hard for him to fail, regardless of how talented he is. And I think he's talented, but we'll see how this supporting cast is unbelievable.
Yeah, I agree. Next big young, I mean, speaking of big young quarterbacks, Daniel Jones. Joe Judge, Jason Garrett, brand new.
Yeah.
And actually, I
like Jason Garrett for the Giants. I mean, he's experienced. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He's got something to prove. And like, he moved to a good situation for him. And I think I like that, actually. I know people don't like Jason Garrett, but I like the spot.
The only difference is it's a completely different offense.
Yeah.
Than Pat Shurmur. I mean, what Daniel Jones is going to see in year two is completely different than what he saw in year one, and he's going to get very little opportunity to learn it.
Yeah, so you think it's heavier on the mid to deep balls? Is that what the big difference
is? I mean, I think with learning, just it doesn't even matter. Even if it's heavier on the deep balls, I don't think it even matters. I think it's more understanding the playbook, some of the just the not necessarily the the audibles, but the reads.
The nuances, I mean, is he? Yeah.
What's that?
The nuances. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the nuances that kind of are not something that when you're watching a game you really understand, but everything that goes under the hood, all of that is going to be completely different.
Pop the hood.
Tell me what you see. So I look at that situation and Joe Judge being a wide receiver coach, which is great. But how do they mesh together? How do Jason Garrett and Joe Judge mesh together? And Joe Judge is completely unproven. So I don't know. I'd be worried about the Giants, worried about Daniel Jones. I would rather put my eggs in the Drew Lock basket than the Daniel Jones basket right now because of that. So
I'd put eggs in both baskets. I don't see any harm in either one of those. I like them both.
Well, the thing is people don't, this is the issue with both players. Daniel Jones and Drew Lock entered the dynasty landscape with heavy pessimism.
Yeah, that's true.
Kyler Murray came in and everybody wanted Kyler Murray.
Yes.
Daniel Jones came in and very few people actually wanted Daniel Jones. Very few people wanted Drew Lock. So the expectation for most of the dynasty players is that these guys are not going to be good.
Yeah, that's true.
So when Daniel Jones comes out and starts the first few weeks and he's slow, or if Drew Lock starts a few weeks and he's slow, their value is going to see a serious dip relative to where, let's say, Kyler Murray comes out in the first few weeks and he's slow. His value is still going to hold, whereas Daniel Jones and Drew Lock's value is going to dip. So these things matter when you're talking about buying and selling opportunities.
I agree.
So if you're a Drew Lock, Daniel Jones owner, I mean, all of this is, this conversation that I'm having is more of, if you own these guys, you have to be patient or expect to be patient. And if you're don't if you don't own these guys and they start out slow, try to take advantage of somebody that's impatient.
There you
that's
go.
The idea, right? And you look at Dwayne Haskins. He's starting to gain some steam. Well, Ron Rivera's a new coach. He's got a new offensive coordinator. You look at that and you say, okay, well, how quick Dwayne Haskins didn't even break out last year. He struggled last year, and now people are expecting him to come out and take the next step. Well, how is he going to take the next step with limited training camp, no, mm-hmm. and potentially no preseason and new coaches?
Yep, I agree.
So, like, all of this stuff, I mean, people should just go in and start looking at these situations and say, okay, where are my opportunities going to be? Where do I need to be patient? That's basically the conversation, because I think we're going to be in a situation that we've never ever seen before.
I agree.
And I think another important factor to all this, preseason is a very, it's a debatable subject. Are there too many preseason games, players getting hurt, so on and so forth? The silver lining is less players are going to get hurt with no preseason. But we look at this moving forward. Let's say 2020 happens and the offenses are just fine. Like, there's no slow start. Everything is normal, so on and so forth. Moving forward, don't you think the NFLPA is going to try to get away from preseasons in general or limit to a game or two?
Maybe. I mean, it's also about money. The PA would definitely want to get away from it, but they would find some stiff competition because of it. You know, it's a business.
Right, but the NFL is also trying to push an extra game.
Yeah, that's true.
A game or two. So do we shift from no preseason to a game? This whole experience that we're going to have, if there ever is even is a season, which is another big thing, it's going to change a lot of NFL items potentially moving forward. And if there is no season altogether, rookies, they're basically unproven talents going into another year of production. Imagine if there is no season, every single rookie that we didn't see play just got hurt, right? Every single one tore their ACL essentially. Right, so it just kind of sucks. And then you look at guys like Julio Jones and the T.Y. Hiltons and the A.J. Greens and the Adam Thielens. Like, all of these guys are now getting a year older. So if you truly don't think the NFL season is going to happen, do you ship these guys for 10% discount, 20% discount? What do you do, Hurley?
Yeah, I would for a small discount, but I got a inclination that a lot of co-owners in my leagues feel the same way, so they're probably looking for a bigger discount if they're going to take the risk of acquiring one of those players on.
Yeah. I mean, so what's your strategy right now? Like, we're sitting in the beginning part of July. What's your dynasty strategy right now?
I think the ship has sailed on moving a lot of those players. You needed to move Julio at the end of last season or beginning of this season before this COVID stuff happened. And I'm kind of keying off on him because he's a prime example of you don't want to get stuck holding the hot potato. So you're trying to find the exact right time to move away from him. And I don't think you can do it anymore. I think his value in a trade will be too low to a point where it's worth just hanging on to him and hoping there's a season and then making a move during the season. And even if worst case scenario happens, there's no season, everybody gets a year older, I still think that next season, next regular season, you're able to, get more value in a trade for Julio after the season begins than if you try to move him right now.
Okay. What are you doing with the higher end guys above that? The DeAndre Hopkinses, the Davante Adams, the Michael Thomases, who aren't 30, but Hopkins will be going, let's say there's no season, Hopkins going into 29 and Adams, Michael Thomas going into 28. So we lose a full year of their prime production. Does that change? Most dynasty owners have no, if the season is canceled, they won't think, oh man, like Adams and Thomas are 28, we just lost a season of their prime, you can still cash them out for pretty much peak value. Do they change for you?
Yeah, I would flirt. I would entertain offers for them, guys like that, but like Julio's 31, there's a huge difference between the DeAndre Hopkins of the world and the Julio Joneses of the world for me. Like last year, Julio Jones, this would be less of a concern. Now it's really at that point where it's like, so just to give you my answer, I wouldn't worry about forcing a move with DeAndre and Devontae, just because there's a lot less concern. They are hitting that, they're flirting with that age cliff, but I'm not worried about it. They're going to retain their value next season. I don't think there's going to be a big hit.
We see it every year. Turn 28, 29, it starts hitting. I mean, they're even the greatest of receivers, it happens.
Do you want to know the one that I am worried about? Like, this might come as a surprise to you. Actually, maybe not.
Yeah, I want to hear it.
The one that I am worried about of the top tier guys is Michael Thomas. And yeah, if Drew Brees misses this season, then there is a significant concern that, you know, will he even come back at all? And then you're losing a full year of Drew Brees production from Michael Thomas. Like, that's best case scenario. Drew Brees has 3 years left. That's 33% of Drew Brees production from Michael Thomas. I'm ready to ship for, you know, at value, or maybe even, I don't think you'd lose anything with a Michael Thomas trade, but that's the one I'm mostly concerned about.
No, absolutely. I think that, I mean, are you not confident in Jameis Winston?
I'm not confident that he's going to be the guy next year. Like, if, let's say, the season doesn't happen, Drew Brees retires, like, this is all completely guessing, obviously, but, and let's mm-hmm. say the Saints decide that Jameis Winston's the guy, they give him a big contract, I think Michael Thomas will get enough volume where it wouldn't be a concern for him, but there's a lot of ifs in there, you know, and I'm not comfortable with that.
Yeah. I mean, I think Michael Thomas is a sell based on how ridiculously highly valued he is relative to everybody else.
And he's 27 also.
He's 27, yeah. I mentioned him in the grouping of three. You probably missed when I said Hopkins, Adams, and Thomas. He's 27, right? So we miss, and it's not even, they don't even have to miss the season, right? The season doesn't have to be canceled, right? It doesn't have to be scratched.
Yeah.
But from a dynasty perspective, what if we get halfway through the season, winter hits, COVID spikes, and then they cancel the season?
Yeah.
Well, we didn't complete any dynasty Super Bowl. Nobody got paid out. Your season was a wash anyways. So whether it gets canceled before the season or whether it gets canceled before the fantasy playoffs, it's all the same.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's say that does happen. Michael Thomas, to me, is you're getting, I don't know why every single Michael Thomas owner isn't trading Michael Thomas in a deal
for... he's a league winner, that's why.
Well, you should be Michael Thomas for a Chris Godwin plus, right? Or find that young receiver that you really, really like that is proven to some degree that you can ship that basket and put into a different basket.
Yeah.
I know Tyreek Hill is got the off-the-field concerns, but why wouldn't you take Michael Thomas and move him into a Tyreek Hill plus basket?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd be fine with that.
You know, you got Mahomes tied up for 1,000 years, and he just needs to get re-signed, right? So, I don't know.
That's crazy. Yeah, yeah. I'm on board with that, especially with COVID-19 looming.
I just think it's definitely a risk. And you honestly, you probably don't have to do it until the season gets canceled, because like we're having this conversation. Let's say the season gets canceled. Nobody's going to be like, oh, man, I got to get rid of Michael Thomas. Like, yeah, nobody's going to think like that.
Happen.
But you should think like that if you own Michael Thomas. So I don't say you have to do that now, but you should be doing that if something happens to the season is kind of the point.
Yep, I agree.
But, yeah, that's kind of I want people to start thinking outside the box and taking a little bit more proactive approach to a lot of these things. And when I say we have to move players, you don't have to move them and like drop them off your roster. You're still getting value out of them because you're just shifting the equity to something else. Yeah. And I'm not telling you where to shift your equity. I'm giving you suggestions, but you should be shifting the equity to a place that you feel is safer.
I agree.
Right? Or at least provides more long-term cushion.
Yep.
And that's just kind of the conversation. I don't know.
And that's pretty good. That's a good spot to leave it. Before we go, I want to do a pop quiz. So as I was searching ages for like DeAndre Hopkins, Michael Thomas, Google shows like results for a lot of different players. So we're going to do like a little impromptu pop quiz. I want to see how accurate you are at guessing ages of players, current and past.
Okay.
So I'm going to try to stump you on many of these. So maybe a little bit of an easier one. How old is Chris Carter, Minnesota Vikings wide receiver phenom?
Chris Carter. He 48.
54.
Wow.
This is a good blast from the past. This was one of my favorite running backs of all time in fantasy. How old is Deuce McAllister?
43.
Oh my God, I love Deuce. Good guess, 41.
Okay.
Now here's some of the more tricky ones. How old is Morton Anderson? I know you remember him.
Yeah. I'm going to say he's 60.
Great guess, 59. How old is Joe Horn? Wide receiver from the Saints.
51.
Joe Horn is 48, which is surprising. I thought he was younger than that personally, but that's crazy.
Well, I mean, I didn't know when he retired. I figured he might have been 35 when he retired, and I want to say they retired 2000. I guess, yeah, that makes sense. 2007 is when he did retire. 2007, 2008.
Yeah.
So I guess, yeah, 51 is a little high.
And I'll do one more. How old is here? Here we go. This is a wild card. How old is Archie Manning?
Archie?
Yeah.
Well, if Peyton is 41, came in the league in 1998, so he's got to be 40 or 41. Archie, I'm gonna say Archie is 71.
you nailed it, 71 on the dot.
Is he? Nice.
That's amazing. Good guesses. I thought you'd be way off on some of those, like Morton Anderson. I was way off on personally.
The Chris Carter one was the one I was most off on because
I
didn't realize that he played so late into his career.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
That's all we got. That's this week's show of DTC Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Check us out again next week. We'll jump back in. Hopefully there's going to be some news that we can cover. Otherwise, maybe we'll go through like the trade wire. That's kind of a fun segment too. But make sure you follow us on Twitter at FFDynastyTrades is the main handle. Anytime there's new developments, like when there's a brand new trade wire tech that came up on the website, DynastyTradeCalculator.com. Anytime there's new stuff like that, new developments, which we're always working on, check out the main handle for all of those updates. And as always, thank you for listening. Happy trading. Bye. Let's go.